Well, welcome everyone to call 8 of the Think Pink and Grow Rich coaching program. So glad you could make it to the call tonight. Tonight's topic, we called it Taming the Time Bandit, because that is what it feels like when all of a sudden an entire day or an entire week or sometimes a month goes by and we don't even know where the time went. It feels like it was stolen from us because it goes so fast. So why we decided to build this topic into this program was because when we've worked with Mary Kay women over the last 3 years, I would say the number one challenge that they bring to us is fear, which if you know about Chris and I, the way we got into Mary Kay, working into Mary Kay, was with the Overcoming Call Reluctance workshop. So that was the number one problem or challenge, was fear of picking up the phone, fear of warm chattering, fear of approaching people about the business. The second thing that came up often as a challenge was time-life balance. So we would give them, you know, solutions to their first challenge, and then we'd say, if you haven't implemented that, why not? And typically time was the excuse that was given to us. So we know that for working mothers, especially working women, women who are trying to run home-based businesses and or still have a job and trying to do this business on the side, that it is a lot to juggle. This is why I tend to do these calls, because Chris is like, I don't want to be giving women advice on how to juggle all their responsibilities, because he doesn't feel like he can relate. And it's funny because I think it was Gloria Steinem who said, I've yet to hear a man ask how to combine family and a career. So far, this tends to be a really unique challenge to women, how to find this, you know, work-life balance. I'm not saying no men struggle with it. Certainly there are men who do. But we tend to have some unique challenges. And later on this call, we're actually going to talk about some ways that our brains work and some certain things that we need in a work schedule, some flexibilities that we need that men may not need as much of. So, you know, we kind of have to take our those limitations into consideration, but then not use them as excuses. So I think tonight's information will help with that. So if you have your worksheet in front of you, number one on the worksheet says, the biggest misconception about time management is actually right there in that statement. It's that we can manage it. That is a misnomer, and it's a misconception. You actually can't manage time. You can't control it. You can't slow it down. You can't stop it. The only thing you can do is manage yourself. So I love the quote in number two. It says, time is democratic and just. So time is democratic and just. It passes by everyone at the same rate. We all start with the exact same amount of time every day. So if you've noticed, there's probably other people around you that seem to get so much done. You know, one of the first seminars that Chris and I went to, there was a national on stage, and I don't know what she was queen of. She was queen of a lot of things, but they brought her and her husband, and I think her 5 children out on the stage, and her children were young. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, there's days I complain. I don't have children. There's days I complain about not being able to get everything done. I can't even imagine doing it with a couple kids, let alone 5. So there always seems to be somebody around who's better at managing, as we think, managing their time. But really, we all start every day with the same amount of time. So what are the strategies that those people are using who look really good at managing time that we might be able to implement ourselves? You know, time is one of those commodities that we can never get back. You can lose money and get it back. You can even lose your health at times and get it back. But time, when it's gone, it's gone. And that really kind of encapsulates the frustration with it. Because we understand how precious it is. We understand what a limitation it is. We have, if we're lucky, 80 to 90 years here on this earth. So any time that we end up wasting is time we're not going to get back. So that's why we have to get a handle on it. So what we're really talking about, if we're not talking about self-management, then in number 3, what we're really talking about is self-management. And for me, self-management is made up of 3 different components, and I'm going to give those to you. So Self-management is made up of priorities, of organization, and I'm sure all the high eyes just groaned, oh no, she's going to talk about organization, and eliminating distractions. So priorities, organization, and eliminating distractions. And if really, if we were better at managing these three things, you could see that we probably wouldn't have such an issue of not enough time if we were able to do these three. So that's what the rest of the call is going to be about, is managing these three things. And here's the thing. I am going to throw a lot of information at you. It's going to come fast and furious, but I want to get through it, you know, as close to possible to the hour, because I know people have other commitments. But if you miss anything, of course, remember you can always email us and ask for clarification. And then, of course, you can always jump on the Q&A call and ask us to fill in any blanks that you might have missed. Okay, so here we go. So under the first heading, priorities, the challenge is that we can get so busy with non-important things that we can go weeks and weeks in our business and never work on our priorities. Like, we can say that we're going to put, I don't know, a system in place or a newsletter in place or something that we believe is really important to growing or, you know, organizing or managing our business. And then that takes a backseat and it just never happens. So I like to use the illustration of a big jar. Number four says, our life is like a big jar. And if you've ever seen this illustration, the first person I saw do it was Tony Robbins on a video. If you've ever seen it done, it's very cool and something you might want to consider doing at like a team meeting with your consultants to kind of give them this illustration. So basically what Tony Robbins did was he brought out a big glass jar and, you know, an empty glass jar, and he put big rocks in it, filled it up with big rocks. And he said, is this jar full? And the audience said yes. Well, then he brings out a bag of pebbles, and he pours the pebbles in the jar. And, of course, the pebbles fill up around the cracks of the big rocks until it's full with pebbles. And he says, okay, now is the jar full? And the audience says, yes. So then he gets out a bag of sand, and he starts to pour the sand in the jar, and the sand fills up, you know, around the cracks of the pebbles until it's completely full. And he says, is it full? And, of course, now they're catching on, and they're like, well, we're not sure. And now he gets out a pitcher of water, and he pours water in, and the water fills up in and around the sand until the jar is completely full. Now can you get anything else in? No, you can't. So his point is the big rocks are the big priorities in your life. They're the big values, the things that are really important to you. And those big rocks have to go in the jar first or have to be fit in your schedule first, or they will never get fit in. So imagine if you put water in the jar first, would you ever get room for the big rocks? No, you wouldn't have room for anything else. So we have to figure out in our life, what are the big rocks? What are the pebbles? What's the sand and what's the water? And then we have to determine, are we letting our entire schedule, entire days, weeks, months, be filled up with the water, which is the least essential part of our life? So big rocks are things like your health, your family, maybe your spirituality, your friends, your work, possibly your finances. Those are things that have to be attended to. So for each big rock, then we want to talk about what is the next, what are the pebbles? So if you turn to page 3, up at the top there on number 5, it says, for each big rock, what are the pebbles, the sand, and the water? So what I like to do is I created a chart, and I listed all my big rocks. And then when I went across, I figured, what's the pebble? So pebbles, the big rock is the priority. It's that value. The pebble are the things that are critical to that priority or to that value. Sand, let's call that important but not critical. And let's call the water not important. Okay. So the example here of business, that's a big rock. The pebble, the critical things, are things like sales calls, facials, marketing that you do, follow-up calls to customers, So anything that's revenue generating, like if you were doing a lead event, that's going to get you leads, that's likely going to get you business, that would be something that would be critical to focus on. So what falls into the sand category is important but not critical things. Inventory, creating packets, maybe organizing your office. And interestingly, the things that fall into the sand column are very often things that you can delegate. We're going to talk about delegation later on in the call. And then water, so things that are not important would be things like email, Facebook, chatting with friends, you know, who may be on our team or may be in our unit, but we're really not talking about work. Those types of things are things that if we fill our day with, we never get to the important or critical activities. And you could probably look at your schedule and see that. So let me give you just another example. Let's pick family. So family is the big rock. The pebble might be quality time with your family members, talking, playing, recreation, sex, and connection with your partner. Those would be the critical things. Sand, so important but not critical, might be driving to activities, helping the kids with their homework, doing chores. Again, a lot of the things that fall in that column, I think, can be delegated. You really want to do the things that only you can do. Only you can spend quality time with your children, but you can pay someone to drive them to their activities. And then not important, again, you know, Facebook, email, TV, video games, those types of things that, you know, tend to have us just zone out and not create connection. So here's what I want you to do. I do want you to look at your schedule, but I want you to look at all of this on a weekly basis, not a daily basis. Because if you try to strive for perfect balance on a daily basis, you know, did I spend time in each of my big rocks today, you're just going to drive yourself crazy. You're human, and there's just no way to keep that perfectly balanced. So what I want you to do is look at it on a weekly basis. On a weekly basis, did I spend quality time or time on the pebbles in my business, with my family, in, you know, on my health, those types of things. Okay. So let's move on to organization. The challenge I think we have today with being organized is that we just have information overload, you know, besides, you know, papers, scraps of papers that, by the way, does anybody remember that years ago they used to tell us that by the year 2000 we'd have a paperless office? Are you kidding me? I look around and I just see stacks of papers. I'm like, where did that idea go? Because it certainly hasn't happened to us. But now what we're inundated by is non-paper things like email and voicemail and text messages. There's just way too many items to keep track of at this point. So there's four main things I use to get organized. And I'm a high I, so I'm not going to say that organization doesn't come naturally to me, because I actually think there's a component to my personality that I actually like organization. But I'm a high I, so I certainly understand the challenge of staying organized. It's almost like I like to set up the system, but then I don't like to follow the system. So maybe some high I's on the phone can resonate with that. So here's the four things I absolutely need to stay organized in my business. I need a calendar system, and I'll explain that more in detail. I need a notebook or notepads. I need a filing system, and I need an email process to figure out what to do when I get inundated with email. So calendar, notebook, filing system, and email process. So let me explain how I use the calendar. Basically, I have two different calendars that I use. I have a 12-month wall calendar up in our office for business. Now, maybe if you, you know, have a family and you're managing their activities too, you might want one of those in your kitchen where you manage all the different personal things. But for me, I keep everything, all our personal, business, holidays, everything on this one calendar. And I still use Outlook, and I'll explain how I use the Outlook calendar. But for me, having a snapshot of the year is really important. One, there's nothing more exciting than putting up a brand new calendar in January that's completely blank. But it also tells me, you know, it's so good to look at because I can see where we've got gaps in our schedule work-wise. I can see gaps where it would be good you know, for us to take a vacation. I can see when the quarters are gone, you know, okay, so the first third of the year, or first fourth of the year is gone, okay, second and fourth of the year. So it's just this big visual of our business. And like I said, I track everything on there. I use colored markers, so I have different colors for different things. For example, I put all holidays and personal things in blue. So weddings, vacations, which, by the way, I try and mark as early in the year as possible, our time off, because if you don't, it doesn't happen. I mark revenue-generating activities in green, which makes sense, right? So like calls that we do, programs that we're running, you know, things like that go in green. I do our days off, events that we're going to attend. I do any regularly scheduled calls. So for you, it might be calls with your team. Any regular scheduled meetings get put on there. We also use it for goal setting and planning projects, because once you lay out all the things that you typically know you have to do, let's say a Monday meeting, a Wednesday call, you can see the areas where you've got time to maybe plan projects and implement other things in your schedule. So it's just a great snapshot. So now what I use my Outlook calendar for is I use my Outlook for all my individual calls. So we do coaching all day long, and I'll have all my coaching clients on my calendar. And then I've got tasks in there as well. So, for example, right now I need to create some content for a program, and I need to get it to my assistant by the 26th. So I went through my calendar, and because Chris and I are traveling the next 10 days to Montana and North Carolina, I blocked time on the 25th to create that content for her, because I know she needs it by the 26th. So basically that is like setting an appointment with myself. And I'm kind of surprised by the people that don't use time blocking on their calendars for themselves. They'll block other people in there and other, you know, activities that involve people, but not themselves. So I tend to use color blocking on my Outlook calendar. You can color code each of the different tasks. And in a few days, you're going to get an email. The subject line will say, "Want to peek at Nancy's calendar?" And what it is, it's a screenshot of my calendar, and it shows you exactly how I use time blocking on my Outlook calendar. So you can use that. I think Google calendars do the same thing, gives you the same you know, flexibility to do that. But for me, that is by far the best way for me to keep track of appointments, personal appointments, and all those commitments. I couldn't do it otherwise. I wouldn't even have a clue of how to go about my week if I didn't have those calendars. Okay, so then notebook. So this is so funny, but for years I have practically run our business using a 5-subject notebook. You know, those big, thick notebooks that kids have for school, and it's got the 5 tabs. And I have to admit, I thought it was pretty unsophisticated and wondered if I should be using a better system. But then I was on a conference call of a woman named Allie Brown, and she had done, like, I think it was a program about time and productivity for millionaire entrepreneurs, and she's a multimillionaire. So, of course, I took this program because I wanted to learn what she was doing. And one of the first things she shares is that she uses a 5-subject notebook to run her business. And I was like, well, that's good. I'm glad to know that somebody so successful uses the same, you know, system that I use. So basically what I have in that first tab are my daily to-do lists. So you know how Mary Kay recommended the top 6 things to get done that day? I sort of have that revolving 6-item list in this first section of my notebook. So every week, I write at the top of a new page my goals for that week, and then I start making my daily 6 list. Then I make it a day at a time, but anything I didn't accomplish or complete one day, those items will roll over to the next day. So that's a really great process to use. And you can do, you know, you can do what you want with the tabs. If you want, you know, a different tab for each big rock, you know what I mean? Let's say you got to track your family's to-dos and, you know, call the dentist and do this and do that. You can also do one tab in your notebook for each of the four areas of your business, like book, sell, recruit, coach, and then just keep track of the different phone calls or different projects that you have in each of those areas. You know, whatever ends up working for you, the reason it works really well for me is if everything gets put in this notebook, then I never have to go hunting for that scrap of paper, you know, with somebody's phone number on it. I always know where stuff is. Everything gets written in there. Another thing I do is I keep notepads everywhere, and there's a reason for this. I keep notepads in my car. I keep one by my bedside, and I keep one in my purse, because what you'll notice is that things will pop in your mind when you start to relax. You know, as you start to fall asleep or wake up, when you're driving in the car kind of zoning out, when you're going for a walk somewhere, all of a sudden, and some people tell me it happens in the shower, all of a sudden you'll realize, oh, I forgot to send that email. And the reason that happens is because as soon as your conscious mind starts to relax, that conscious mind that's talking to you all day long, as soon as that starts to relax, your subconscious kind of comes up, comes to the fore, and will remind you of things. So what happens is I'll write what it is I just remembered in a little notebook, and then when I get home or when I get up in the morning, I'll take a page out of that little notebook, and I will transfer it into my big notebook. So everything gets transferred into that big notebook within, you know, within 24 hours. That's how I prevent things from slipping through the cracks. So if I forgot to call somebody, that notebook gets taken in the house, or the piece of paper gets taken in the house and transferred onto my big, you know, to-do list. What I have, and this is probably important to say, so you say, well, I've got a lot more things going on than just a daily six, so what do you do about that? So what I do is with my notebook pages, again, I had my weekly goals at the top, then about two-thirds over on the right-hand side, so like two-thirds of the page is on the left of the line and a third of the page is on the right of the line, I take a ruler and I draw a line down vertically on the page. And so on the left two-thirds, I track my daily six. And on that right-hand third of the page, I have like a running list of tasks, because the tasks add up to more than six activities, I can guarantee it. And that's where I keep the track of, you know, I'll call the dentist and reschedule that appointment, or book the hotel room, blah, blah, blah. So that's where I keep the running list of to-dos. Okay, so let's move on to the filing system. I never liked to file, and therefore I had what I would call a horizontal filing system in my office, meaning everything was just in piles. I've heard people say, are you a filer or a piler? I was definitely a piler. And I thought that I knew where everything was, but I have to admit that there were times that I would go digging in order to look for something. So I read this in a book once. It was a really simple filing system, and it almost seems silly or ridiculous when I first heard it, but it worked really well. Basically, the gentleman suggested that you have a file folder for everything, like every scrap of paper you create a file folder for, which sounds like, okay, well, I would have hundreds of files, and that actually does start to happen. So what happens is you have folders accessible and alphabetical. And you'll just start creating them. You'll have, let me get an example. I just asked my assistant to print out Chris and my credit score, because we want to get a business credit card. So we wanted to know what our credit score was to go look for, the right kind of credit card for us. And so she printed out our credit scores. Well, it's sitting on my desktop or my desk because I don't know what to do with it. I need to create a file that just says credit score and then file it alphabetically so it goes in the C's. What will end up happening is you will start to create categories eventually. And then, you know, for example, I came home from seminar once with a quote that I ripped out of one of the brochures by Mary Kay that was just great. It was just a great quote, and I didn't want to forget it. So I had this scrap piece of paper, and I kid you not, it went from – being on my desk to being set on my computer to being put over here on my speaker to being put, like, it just kept moving around because I didn't want to lose it, but I didn't know what to do with it either. So I finally just put it in a file folder that said Mary Kay. So here's the thing. When you go to look for something again, your brain's going to tell you to go back to a certain spot. So with that quote, I went to look for a file folder called quotes because that's what I kind of thought I put it in. I want that quote from Mary Kay. I went and looked for a quote file. Couldn't find it, of course. So then I started looking through and found the Mary Kay one and went, oh, okay, got it. Here's the trick. At that moment, because I want to keep the quote, I changed the file folder. I literally turn it inside out and rename it quotes because if my mind thinks that that should be filed under something called quotes, then you can guarantee the next time I go to look for it, I'm going to look at quotes again and not Mary Kay. So at that point, I changed the file folder. So here's what eventually happens. You end up with so many folders. Some you can consolidate into categories. But what I would do is every 6 months or so, I would go through and things I hadn't used or couldn't even remember why I kept them, I would just toss them and then recycle the folder and use a label and, you know, put it over the title and rename it. So I wasn't throwing out a ton of folders, and I always had this, you know, organized. I had organized stacks of paper, and so right now I'm looking at three standing file folders full of files where I file different things. Okay. So last was the email process. So on the next page, it talks about number 7, the 4Ds system to get control of my inbox. And this I read in a book by David Allen. And he wrote a book called Getting Things Done. David Allen, Getting Things Done. And so he broke email down into 4 different categories, or he said email breaks down into 4 different categories. Delete, do, delegate, or defer. So delete, do, delegate, or defer. And I'll explain which each of these are. He said basically deleting emails is, you know, self-explanatory. Most people are subscribed to emails they never even read. So instead of just keep deleting them, take the time to remove yourself, to unsubscribe yourself. If you find yourself, even something you really like, you know, there's people I've subscribed to their newsletters, and I really like them. But if you find yourself skipping it 3 or 4 times, just delete it. Just delete yourself. You're not even going to realize that you did it after the fact. But just remove yourself from the subscription. It's estimated that 50% of the email that we get can just be deleted. 50% can just be deleted. This is where you're going to do any action in an email that takes you less than 2 minutes. Okay, so anything that'll take less than 2 minutes, a quick response to somebody, sending someone's phone number, that kind of thing, if it'll take you less than 2 minutes, then just go ahead and do it. If you can delegate it to somebody else, then delegate it. And, you know, a lot of times women will say, well, I don't have any assistant in my business. I can't afford it yet. I'm not making enough money. Just remember, you can get creative with delegating. You can get creative in getting help. You can barter services with somebody who has that skill, you know, and you can trade services. Don't forget kids. Kids can be very useful to delegate things to. And make sure you get, especially if you're pressed for time, make sure you give up the things that you don't need to be doing. So, for example, I realized once that I was really playing the cruise director or the travel agent for all my friends. Because I was good at it, I was organizing every trip. You know, I was booking hotels and flights and coordinating leave times and printing out maps. I was just doing everything. And all of a sudden one time I just didn't have time to do it. There was no way. And I had to hand that off to my friends and say, I'm sorry, you guys are going to have to put it together. And they did a fine job. And it was like quite a relief to actually show up and not be in charge of anything for a change, and saved me a ton of time doing that coordination. So, you know, delegating might not just be to an assistant, but get creative with that. It's estimated that between doing and delegating, that's about 30% of your email right there that you have to do or you could delegate. And then defer are things that you can't delete, you can't delegate, and you can't do in less than 2 minutes. Those are the things you want to defer and schedule it like a meeting on your calendar. So let's say it's like, for example, it's an email from my assistant that says, hey, I need this content for this program, and I need it by the 26th. Well, I know I can't do that right now. There's no way. So I write her back, and I tell her when I can do it by. I can do it on the 25th. And then I go to my calendar, and I schedule it. And that, they say, is typically about 20% of your email needs to be deferred and worked on at a later time. Okay, so hopefully that was helpful for you. Another thing I try to do, and believe me, sometimes it spins out of control, I try to keep my inbox to under 100 messages. Right now it's at 107, but I'm already looking at some that I can just go ahead and delete. For me, that seems to be manageable, and few things slip through the cracks, but I have had it just a few months ago, it spun out of control to over 1,000 emails in my inbox, and I had to get ruthless with deleting things. And the best way to do that is actually to sort it by the from, like who it's from. And then what you'll do is you'll see emails grouped together. So, for example, if I sort by Renee, our assistant, you know, it would bring up 40 emails from her. And I know I've answered them because if I hadn't, she wouldn't still be working for us. She would have quit by now. So I can go ahead and probably delete 35 of those 40 emails. So that's a great way to kind of sort them and get rid of them. But I like to keep it under 100. Okay, so next we're going to go on to eliminating distractions, which is a big one. So number 8 says, the biggest time wasters are email and social media. Or I might as well just say Facebook, because I don't know of any site that people are on more than Facebook nowadays. So biggest time wasters are email and most likely Facebook. So here's a couple tips that can help. Number one, turn off your email notification. So if your email still dings at you or it still pops up a little icon in the bottom right of your screen to tell you you've got an email, turn that off. I did it years ago. Because otherwise, your entire workday is reactive to other people. Other people's requests, other people's emails, you're not being proactive if you let that drive you. So I very often, when I'm really wanting to focus, I shut the email right down. I don't even have access to it. Same with Facebook. It's too tempting if it's left open to keep bouncing back there to see if somebody responded, you know, to your last post. And I don't think I mentioned this later on, so I'll mention it now. You know, with Facebook, you have to be careful that you don't become addicted to it. There's actually research that shows that when we post something and when people respond to our post, it gives us a surge of chemicals in our body, very similar to the chemicals that are released when you exercise or fall in love or do drugs. So you have to be careful because those endorphins or the adrenaline or whatever it is that gets kicked out can become very addictive. So people will post, and if nobody responds, they get disappointed, which makes them post more. Or if they post and a lot of people respond, they get that satisfaction, and it causes them to post more. So just be aware that this type of stuff can actually be addictive. B, do not check email when I first start working. So don't start your day with email, because what will happen, again, you'll get sidetracked. You may end up spending 3 hours answering emails and never get to those big rocks, right, those revenue-generating activities in your business. It's recommended that we check email twice a day. I know that sounds crazy, but you could check it once before lunch and once in the late afternoon and still respond to people in a timely manner. Think about that. Most people don't expect immediate response, but within 24 hours I think is kind of a good standard business practice during the week. So if you checked email at 11 o'clock every day and 4 o'clock every day, you'd be able to respond to everybody within 24 hours. And think of the time it would free up for you. C says, give myself 30 to 60 minutes to apply the 4D system. So basically, when you go to actually work in your email, let's say at 11 o'clock or 4 o'clock during the day, block the hour if that's how long it takes you, or block the half hour. Be really intentional about working that system, the delete, do, delegate, or defer system. I've gone so far as to gotten a kitchen timer and set it next to my computer and set the timer for 60 minutes, and it'll buzz me and tell me when I need to stop. So what I find that is if you tend to work in segments like that, followed by 30 minutes of rest and recovery, you're much more productive throughout the day. Women, we tend to multitask, and we tend to try and do everything and just keep going. And if I work harder and if I work faster and if I juggle more, someday I'll get to the end of this to-do list. You will never get to the end of a to-do list. It's just not going to happen. So remember, women need this type of break, I think even more than men do, so as not to get burnt out. So what you should do is, block your work in times of, let's say, 90 to 120 minutes, because I think 2 hours is pretty much the max that somebody can stay focused and concentrate on something. I tend to work in 90-minute increments, and I'll set the timer for 90 minutes. I'll stay focused on something, which means turn off my phone, turn off my email, turn off Facebook, and just work on something like project-related. And then when the timer goes off, I set it for 30 minutes. And I take a break, and I get away from my computer, and I'll go read the newspaper or do a crossword puzzle or go get a latte from Starbucks or something like that. And what you'll find is if you just do a couple of focused time periods throughout the day, I mean truly focused where you're not multitasking, you will get so much more done. We talk about that a little bit later on too. So 9 says, for maximum focus, get out of the house. So for maximum focus, get out of the house. As women, when we're home trying to work a home-based business, we get so easily distracted by housework, by kids, just by the home in general, by messes that we see, by things that we see all of a sudden that need to be organized. I always say the hardest part of the day is getting from your bedroom to your office without being pulled into all kinds of different things at home. So my best solution is working somewhere else. If I can pack up in the morning and get out to Starbucks or a Panera Bread or even the library, we have a beautiful library close to our town, and it's got big wooden tables that you can spread out on when you're working on a big project. It's quiet. It's just a great environment. And, I keep mentioning high eyes because this is a challenge for high eyes. But just remember, if you spend too much time at home, you can get depressed. So if you're trying to make your business work from behind your computer, you have got to get out and be with people. And that goes for all the styles, but high eyes especially. When I was starting my consulting business 10 years ago, I had another gentleman tell me who worked from home. And he did similar consulting work in companies to what I did. And he said, Nancy, I know your style, and I'm telling you, if you don't get out every day and talk to someone, you're a candidate for depression. And I said, what is he talking about? I'm like, I've never been depressed a day in my life. And yet, I would find after the second or third day of not leaving my house, all of a sudden my energy started to get real low. I started to get real discouraged about my business. And he said, I don't care who you talk to. He said, I don't care if you talk to the postman. You need to get out and talk to people every day. So since I've, done this thing where, and I have a beautiful office. I do. It's almost a shame that I can't be productive in here. But eventually those four walls start closing in on you. And then I pack up my bag and I go to typically Starbucks. When I do that, what I find is my focus goes up, my productivity goes up, and my creativity goes up. All good things when you're working on your business. Okay, number 10 says, for maximum productivity, batch like activities. So batch like activities. Basically what that means is group all activities that are similar together. Okay, so, and I learned a long time ago that if I let people fracture my schedule, like a call here, a call in 2 hours, another call 2 hours after that, and then calls all week long, I never got anything done. So now I'm very intentional about keeping my coaching clients all on 2 days a week. I only coach people, and I fill up those days, but I only coach people 2 days a week, which leaves me 2 days of things like marketing and selling, so the revenue-generating activities of our business, networking, speaking, those types of things, and pretty much one full day for administrative stuff, buffer stuff, cleanup stuff, organizing stuff. I work every Monday for 2 hours with our business manager, so she's, you know, on track and moving projects forward. So I really have to keep my activities batched together. So I would recommend that you schedule all your calls back-to-back with your team, with your customers. I would suggest that you schedule interviews back-to-back. Meaning if you want to keep on time and not have one go for 2 hours, then you need to schedule people, maybe on the hour. I've heard of people who schedule people at 1:15 because they know that something's going to take an hour and 15 minutes. They don't want to waste time. Schedule errands back-to-back too. So, don't run out to your dry cleaner and then come home and then run out to Staples and then come home and then run out, do a loop, do all of it at one time. And then because if you're working in your business full time, you're an entrepreneur, you have the luxury of living off peak. And what that means is we don't have to do things when other people have to do them. We don't have to go to the bank on Friday afternoon when we get our check. We don't have to go fight rush hour traffic at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. So do things off-peak. I rarely will have an 8 o'clock a.m. meeting. One, because I don't like getting up that early to get to an 8 o'clock meeting. But two, I don't want to deal with the rush hour traffic. I don't want to go to Dunkin' Donuts and spend 10 minutes in line if I know I can go at 9 or 9:30 and zip through in 30 seconds. So don't go grocery shopping on a Friday afternoon or a Saturday morning. Go Monday afternoon when it's slow. You probably work on weekends. So buffer that, errand time back in your week somewhere. But if you live off peak and do things opposite the time that other people do them, you end up saving a lot of time. Okay, number 11. For maximum peace of mind, stop multitasking. So this is a hard thing for women to wrap their heads around. And I will have women tell me all the time, but I'm really good at multitasking. My husband's terrible at it. He can't do them more than one thing at a time, but I'm really good at it. But here's what I want you to realize. Your brain can actually only focus on one thing at a time. Now, I know some people are resistant to that, especially women. No, I can do multiple things. You can only do multiple things because your subconscious is doing one thing and your conscious mind is doing another. So in that sense, yes, you can, because each part of your brain can do one activity. That's why you can be like asleep at the wheel. You can drive home and never even remember passing the church on the corner because your subconscious mind took over. And because it drives home all the time, it can do it almost in a sleep-like state. I know it sounds scary, but we really are unconscious at the wheel. So that would be why you can drive and sing, because the singing is the conscious activity, right? But if somebody calls and you start talking to them or someone starts talking to you in the car, you're going to miss part of that song because you can't listen to the words of the song and the person talking at the same time. So it's the same thing with you're on the phone and you're trying to write an email. If you're really focused on what you're writing on the email, you can't hear the person on the phone and what they just said. So remember that the brain can only focus on one thing at a time. So when you're constantly multitasking throughout the day, it's exhausting. So just remember that. If you feel exhausted at the end of the day, it's probably because you're trying to do too much at once. So I'll give you some solutions. So the number 12 says the number one reason most women feel torn between work and family is because they are never truly present with either or in either area. So the reason they feel torn is because they're never truly present in either one. So we hear so many women say, when I'm with the when I'm with the kids, I'm thinking about my business, and when I'm in my business, I'm thinking about my kids. So no matter where I am, I'm not present. So, you know, and there's a reason for this. You know, women's brains, you might have heard the joke that women's brains are like spaghetti and men's are like waffles. So men's brains are compartmentalized, right, for the most part. And again, we're generalizing. I'm sure there's exceptions, although I haven't met them. So men, you know, their brain is compartmentalized like a waffle. So they're in their workspace, or they're in their love space, or they're in their sports space, or they're in their dad space, you know, and then they're focused completely on that. And it's almost hard to get them to shift gears into something else. That's why they're not good at multitasking. Whereas women's brains are not compartmentalized. Our brains are like spaghetti. Everything is just all mixed together. There's no separation. So that makes it really hard to shift from one area to another. So a potential solution for that is something called the FFB time system. It's also called the entrepreneurial time system. 13 says the FFB time system was designed to help me get present. So here's what FFB stands for. It stands for free, focus, and buffer time. So free, focus, and buffer time. Now what free time is time that you block, and I recommend or suggest that it be 24 hours at least, but it's free time where you do no work. Okay, so let's say you did take a traditional weekend and you didn't work Saturdays or Sundays. That is a day that you don't do any work. You don't answer voicemail. You don't answer email. You wouldn't even drop off, you know, products to a customer. You do nothing work-related. That allows you to completely unplug and to completely engage with your family. And for me, that's Saturday, unless we're out of town doing a training. Saturdays are like sacred to me. At noon on Friday, I turn off, and I will not look at work or think about work or do anything until Sunday. Saturday is my day, and Chris even knows that if he tries to talk to me about work on Saturday, I'll often not even, like, I'm like, I can't even think about that right now. Like, I'll just shut down. So I think it's really important to get at least 24 hours. If you can get 36 to 48, that's wonderful. And it's why when our clients go on vacation, I don't allow them to touch base with us. If they try and tell me they're going to be working on a business plan or an email report or something like that, I tell them absolutely not. If this is truly a vacation, you don't work. Focus time is time that you block to work on revenue-generating activity only. Revenue-generating activity only is your focus time. So for me, remember how I said I group my coaching calls all together in 2 days? That's so that two other days I can focus on revenue-generating activity. So that's focus time. And then buffer time is kind of like all that stuff that falls in between, right? It's admin work, it's cleanup, it's organizing, it's, you know, following up, getting through things that you started but didn't finish. And the best thing to do with buffer time is always put it between your free and focus. It allows you to transition. Because if you've been working all day and you're in work mode and you just go and get your kids and pick them up, that's a tough transition to make. Your head's still in the business, and vice versa. If you've been with your kids and then you just all of a sudden shift into work mode, it's kind of hard to make that transition. So buffer time allows you to do that. I would always put at least a half an hour of buffer time between those two other time areas. So let me give you a perfect example since we've got the time to do so. I get my nails done by this lovely Vietnamese woman named Quinn. And I just adore her, and she's a single mom. And one day I was in her nail salon, and she was so tired that when she wasn't working on my nails, she was literally falling asleep in her chair. She put her head down, and her head would start to nod. And I said, Quinn, I said, why are you so tired? And she hadn't slept well, and she's got, you know, some family challenges going on and things like that. And I said, well, you need a nap. I said, because I'm afraid you're going to fall asleep at the wheel. And she said, no, I have to go pick up my son. He's at daycare. I have to leave right from here and go get him. I said, okay. I said, so you leave the shop here at 5, you go get him, you take him home. I said, what's it like at home because you're this exhausted? Oh, it's terrible. I can't focus. I'm tired. I'm irritable. I yell at him a lot more, you know, that kind of thing. I said, so what if you were to take a nap? I said, what would his daycare do if you called today and said you weren't going to pick him up till 6 or 6:30? She said, nothing. She said they'd probably give him a snack and might charge me a little more. I said, okay. I said, so why don't you, when the shop is closed, I'm like, you've got these amazing massage chairs. I said, why don't you take a nap? I said, crash for a half an hour, 60 minutes, whatever it is you need. I said, look at the difference it's going to make for the evening ahead that you have with your son. So I didn't know if she was going to do it or not, but that was my recommendation because I just can't even imagine trying to function that exhausted. So she did do it. She actually took a nap in her car. And now when I see her, she'll tell me how often she's taken a nap, that she'll pick him up a half an hour later from daycare and go nap either in the car or in the salon. And she's better rested and she's less irritable and, you know, it just works overall better for everybody. So I think the thing I want to leave you with is that I think what women do, we do to ourselves, we run ourselves ragged. And if you've ever heard the, it's a book, it was called Oil for Your Lamp. It was about how, you know, if you give away all your oil by always constantly giving to everybody else and you don't keep any oil for yourself, that, oh, this was actually an illustration I think that came out of the Bible, that, and you know what, I'll let you read it. So you should look it up. It's a book called Oil for the Lamp. I don't want to make a mistake, but basically if you ran out of oil, your lamp would die and you wouldn't be seen. So the, you know, point is you have to take care of yourself. You have to fill your own lamp with oil and make sure you don't give away more than you can afford to. So or another illustration is, you know, on an airplane when the oxygen masks come down, you know, they always say put on your own oxygen mask before you help the person next to you. Because if you don't, you'll pass out, you can't help yourself, and then you can't help anybody. So I think as women, we have to put ourselves back in the equation, and we have to take care of ourselves. And it's counterintuitive, because when we feel behind and we feel stressed, we just convince ourselves that it means we just have to move faster, and that it's completely the opposite of what we actually need to do. We actually just need to stop. We need to stop and take a break. So what I would encourage you to do is in the next couple weeks, if you're running ragged, if you're feeling exhausted, if you're feeling overwhelmed, I want you to track your time, number one, for a week and look at it on like a half hour or an hourly basis, you know, just, but don't go till the end of the day and then try and backtrack your time because you'll forget half of where you spent it. But, you know, just keep a little notebook with you and follow your schedule. And a couple of things you want to look at. Where is the revenue-generating activity for my business? Where is the quality time with my family? And where is the quality time with myself? Because those tend to be the three areas that I see women not paying attention to. So taking care of yourself, spending quality time with your family, and revenue-generating activity with your for your business. Okay, so I just want to give you a couple tools and resources to help you manage and organize your life, some books that I've read that have been really useful. So one was called The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferriss. Now, when I first read his book, I have to admit, I thought this guy was really unrealistic. He's a young guy. He's got a ton of energy, tends to succeed at everything he does. And I just thought, for my business, some of his suggestions were unrealistic. But before you judge that, what I would say is find the meaning of them. Even if you can't implement them fully, just check them out. Just try them out. Because he was really the one that kind of had this radical approach to email. I think he says he doesn't do it now, but he used to check email just once a day. And I thought, well, I can't do that. That's not responsive enough. So instead of just writing that off, I decided to try and check email twice a day, and it made me much more productive. I already mentioned Getting Things Done by David Allen. That was also a great book. And another one that I loved was called The Power of Full Engagement The Powerful Engagement by a man named Jim Lohr, L-O-E-H-R. And the concept of that book was that it's not about managing time, like we said. It's about managing energy. And if you can take care of yourself, and it's got great case studies in it. That was what was interesting about the book, is different people that they worked with to help them better manage their energy, which meant taking care of themselves, and how productive those people became once they were taking time out for themselves. So that's a great book to look up to, The Powerful Engagement. Okay, I must have talked really fast because I'm kind of shocked I got through all of that information in an hour. You probably feel like I fed it to you through a fire hose. So you'll be getting some emails from us about this topic of, you know, taming the time bandit, some more resources, some additional information. And then in 2 weeks, on June 26th, we have the call Maximizing Lead Events. So that's a great way to get more leads. You know, if you're used to getting one or two leads from warm chattering or something like that, a lead event can bring you 100 leads in a day. So it's definitely worth looking into, but there's certain ways to do it. There are lead events that literally can just be a waste of your time and money, so you actually do have to know how to maximize those. So that's what we're going to talk about next. Okay, I hope everybody got something valuable from tonight's information. Email us if you have any questions. And we look forward to being with you in a couple weeks. Have a good night.